Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Hannah Kyle Crichton. Hannah is a talent producer for Jimmy Kimmel Live, is a festival programming and development consultant at Just for Laughs, and is a documentary producer at Bite to the Future and A Russian Summer. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. How did you start producing? And full disclosure, I've known you since you were in high school or middle school, maybe?
A young age. When I was very gawky and gangly.
But you were doing theater.
Yeah, so I moved to LA almost 5 years ago. And I moved here thinking I wanted to act.
Because you actually have a degree.
Yeah, so I graduated from Western Washington University with a theater degree, acting and playwriting. And I wasn't really sure what I was doing, but my mom lived in LA. So I decided to move here, because if I didn't leave Seattle, I didn't think I ever would. Mm-hmm. And then I worked at a bar for my first year and took acting classes and did some Upright Citizens Brigade classes.
Fun.
It was very fun, but after about, 8 months, I realized I really did not want to be a professional actor. I really enjoyed being, a big fish in a small pond. I really enjoyed musical theater. I'm not a very skilled, subtle actor. I'm a singer and dancer. I'm more of a performer, I would say. And I still struggle with that because I love to perform, and Los Angeles is a town of... There's no community theater. It's all people who want to be actors. So I really miss it. I loved performing. But ultimately, it is definitely a hobby of mine, and I tap dance for fun in my house, and sing. And I took singing lessons for fun, but, it's not... I don't have the drive. You know, they say if you want to do anything else, do that. So
I always think that's actually really good advice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I, of course, the allure of LA and, fame and being known is a thing. But after working at a bar and also seeing celebrities and things like that, I was like, ooh, I really don't want, that's just not for me. I'm not judging anyone who wants it, but it ain't for me. Mm-hmm. And so I thought about kind of my skill set. And, I went on Craigslist while I was working at this bar, and I found this producer's assistant job, and I just randomly applied and got an interview and then ended up getting it, which I interview well. I didn't really have a resume for it, but I am, after some thinking and reflecting, I'm extremely organized, and, I know that I'm a leader, and all my skill sets just kind of scream producer without me realizing it. I've always enjoyed taking charge and having a binder with, folders and dividers. And so I got this job off Craigslist, which ended up being a job on this improvised stand-up show called Set List, which performs all over LA and goes to festivals, and it goes to a bunch of international festivals, and it was kind of like a digital... content on Nerdist, which is a platform online. And so I started working for them. And then what's funny is I had done a stand-up class in college, and it was something I really enjoyed and I liked to watch. And then I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't really think you could work in stand-up comedy and not be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, I never considered that myself.
Yeah, so...
That's cool.
Yeah, so I just kind of fell into it, honestly. And I was very lucky because I liked it a lot. And that job was just really, I was just very lucky, and I know that, because I got to immediately start working with, some very big names, which was, pretty cool for having just moved to L.A. This was, a year into L.A., and the relationships I was making were, very exciting at that point, so.
Yeah. Well, then, this is such a good example. I mean, I have found over and over again that the entertainment industry is filled with people who fell in love with acting,
mm-hmm.
often when they were kids,
yep.
pursued it, but then found that there was a better fit for them somewhere else in the industry, sort of a sideways step they could make that was something they were actually happier doing. And it turns out that they loved the industry, they loved that world, but it didn't mean they had to be an actor necessarily.
Totally. And even just reflecting on my high school experience, I really liked doing tech. I painted sets and I did Spotlight, where you're wearing the headset, and looking back, it's oh, that was actually something I also enjoyed. And you just, I think you're kind of taught to be the performer when you're doing theater. And I just never really even considered something like stage managing, which I probably Like, that was more for, like, the shy kid who wanted to still be in theater. But, like, I'm definitely not shy, but I don't... Yeah, it's just... It's funny how you grow up doing something like acting and singing and dancing your whole life, and then you just stop when you're an adult because it's something you do to fill your time as a kid, and you go to camps and things like that. But it's like, how do I stay involved in this in a way where... It's just... Yeah, I don't know. It's a world that's really fun to be in, mm-hmm. and it's fun to be in a world of creative people. And that's why Los Angeles is, my mom moved away and really misses it. And she always says, like, I really miss the creatives because it's a town of, like, dream seekers or people who just want to be involved and are figuring out what that dream is.
I love that. That's pretty much the way I describe it. You know, when you are not from LA or you don't, when you're outside of LA, you know, we're from the same island in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. You have this impression of it. You know, and the impression is inevitably not a very accurate one. But my experience at this point, and we've been here for fully 7 years now, is that it's full of smart, hardworking, creative people. And those are the three words I would use. And yeah, dream seekers too. Those are cool people to spend your days with.
Totally. And I think coming from Seattle, LA, the reputation is like, what a gross town. Or like, but I try to tell myself if I ever get down, I'm like, the guy who sat in a dark room editing Titanic for 3+ years didn't feel like he was, like, changing lives, probably. He's just sitting in this dark room, like, kind of, maybe even not really happy. But then, like, a lot of people would say, like, or maybe Titanic isn't a great example, but think of your favorite movie and the one that affected you.
Yeah.
And, like, someone saw Titanic and was like, oh, my God, that movie changed my life.
Yeah.
And that guy doesn't realize that he, you know, changed this person's life or had something to do with that. And I just think, like, entertainment has a weird reputation, but it's like, what do you do, person who's judging me, when you turn on your TV? Like, there is a line producer that made that stupid Bachelor in Paradise show that you love binging. And, like, that guy, like, made that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every show on TV, like, I look back and I was like, oh, I used to watch, like, Laguna Beach or The Hills, or people watch The Kardashians, or, like, things that get this bad reputation, but, like, so many people watch this stuff because it's cathartic or makes them happy, or something like National Geographic or the news or comedy or a drama or Law and Order SVU. Who doesn't like when they have a fever to watch Law and Order SVU for 12 hours? You know what I mean? It's like, people give us a shitty reputation in entertainment, I think. But it's like, it's the thing that makes people happy, just like sports or mm-hmm. entertainment. That's what you do to waste your time in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. And to produce that kind of material that does, in fact, you know, inspire people or take them out of their lives for a little while and at a time that's important, you know, move them or make them laugh or cry. You have to be hardworking and intelligent and creative. That's what it takes to create that stuff, that product.
Yeah.
And so those people end up being cool people to hang with, and it ends up being an interesting life no matter what piece of it you occupy.
Totally. I agree.
That's so cool. So you fall in love with acting and singing and dancing and theater when you're a kid. You get the bachelor from, I guess it was performance and playwriting, right?
Yeah, bachelor of theater with a concentration in acting and playwriting, yeah.
Okay. From Western Washington. Do you feel like that education has made a difference for your journey so far?
Yeah, I think, you know, college is an interesting one because I would say I had a very nice college experience, and I'd say college was probably equal parts learning to be an adult and living on my own, and then also equal part, like, learning about theater. And, college was obviously monumental for me in, you know, just becoming an adult. There are plenty of people I know here who had nothing to do with theater and then ended up in the industry. So I just feel like so many people's paths are wildly different. But I mean, I'm very happy I went to college and I made lifelong friends, and like getting to do college theater is a very unique experience. And it feels like semi-professional. Like I was in Rent my senior year of college, and we performed for 1,000 people, and like, it's a very cool experience. And, you know, it gives you confidence and like you learn a lot. And I do wish my program had more about the film side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I've like kind of talked to a professor about a bit, being like, hey, if you ever want to chat, 'cause like they've really set you up for the theater world and not so much you know, show business is not just show. 50% of it is show and 50% of it is business.
Yep.
And I came out of that program only having 50% of knowledge and knowing nothing. You know, a theater program is very different from like a, I feel like conservatory is different, or like UCLA or USC, like film is different, you know. And so theater is specifically theater. So I do wish I had more of that business knowledge before moving here. But at the same time, I moved here and figured it out. And I think a lot of people do. And I did have a couple of friends kind of in the industry, but like nothing that like helped me. I just fell into this one job and it was very lucky. So like some people, I would say if you have connections, don't be afraid to use them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are kind of hesitant to, if you know someone, talk to them. Mm-hmm. I've had coffee with many people who have moved here just to like be like, what are you thinking? And, but at the same time, I think you could come here with no education and figure it out too. Education on a resume helped me get my first job. And I was able to say, oh, I studied abroad and did this. And it was, you know, it's intriguing mm-hmm. for the person you're talking to. And so obviously, you know, college and a theater program can help. And the guy who first hired me, I do remember, was like, oh, you're a theater program like person. Cool. Like, so was I, or something. Mm-hmm. Or he was like, oh, so you kind of get the world. Like, so it did help, I guess, thinking back, but I would have been fine probably without it too.
It's really interesting. I just read a statistic somewhere. I've got to chase this down where it came from, but it was, you know, the issue was like, if you want to be an actor, is it better to just like hit LA right after you graduate from high school? Or is it better to spend the 4 years getting, you know, the training? And the way they evaluated that was by looking at, like the award nominees this season. And they seemed to split out about 50-50 with people who'd gotten started maybe before they were 18 or didn't go to college at any rate. It was questioned, did they study in college? And people who had. So there isn't a clear, like, oh yeah, don't waste your time. It's like, how can you waste your time in college and education? Totally. Like, makes your life better. But others, like, it was very interesting. So it's like, it's a very individual thing.
And I also think, like, those people that didn't go to college, you don't really know what their financial background was before moving. Like, I would say a lot of the actors that I know here come from, like, very supportive families financially so that they have time to go to auditions. And a lot of my friends who did college then had time to, like, learn how to adult. And I would say my friend Jake Maliv is a good example of someone who, like, went to college and now works really hard at a restaurant and is a sommelier and, like, at the same time is going to auditions. And, like, he learned in college how to multitask and do that. And so I would say that's a part of it too, of learn, you know, if you're going to be financially independent as a 22-year-old trying to be an actor, that college experience probably helps you figure out navigating that lifestyle.
Probably a good idea. So again, no right way or wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of confusion about what producers actually do. There's a ton of different kinds of producers, many different kinds of producers. And you are a couple of different kinds of producers actually, aren't you?
Yeah.
Can you describe what you do as a producer in your different hats?
Sure.
That you wear?
So my main gig is I'm a talent producer, which is a little different from casting. I'm a talent producer where I've done casting, but a talent producer is someone who kind of books you to be yourself. So like I'm booking this comedian who is being themselves either on this talk show or in this game show or doing stand up versus casting. You're casting someone to play a role. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So talent producing, what I do is it's a lot of scouting talent and databasing and reaching out to agents and managers. Through all my jobs, I've gotten quite familiar with the comedy world specifically. It's kind of a small world once you're in it. I'm less familiar with some of the lower level open micers. But once people are kind of, you know, with anything, you kind of have to pass a certain threshold and then you get in it and you find your door and then people start to learn who you are. And otherwise, there's just too many people to try to, too many people that live in LA to try to track. But so it's a lot of being aware of what's going on and the trends, and then talent producing, you know, it ranges from when you book someone that involves scheduling and contracts and salaries and all of that. But really, if it says talent producer, Hannah Kyle Crichton, that means all the talent that you're seeing, I was in charge of getting on that show. And they're there because I booked them.
And you made it happen.
And I made it happen, yeah. And then I'm also a documentary producer. So I directed one and I'm producing another. but the one I'm producing, I just met a guy here who, through a friend who I knew needed a producer, and he's the director, and I was just upfront with him, and I said, I love documentary, I really want to get into the world, I have all this experience, talent producing, how hard can normal producing be?
She says.
Yeah. No, but I truly believe anyone can be a good producer if they're organized, diligent, hardworking, and multitasking. Mm-hmm. But I would say my main gig, I want to become more of a documentary producer. That's my goal as a dreamer myself. But my main gig is talent producing, and it's, you know, booking and casting, but mostly booking someone on a show like, we just did the show on Comedy Central called The Comedy Jam, which was booking a comedian or someone in the comedy world to tell a story about a certain song, and then they sing that song with a band, and there were a lot of, like, guest musicians as well, but it was fun, and we ended up with, like, Jesse Tyler Ferguson and Mark Duplass and, you know, a wide range of people, so that's very fun, but that was Jesse Tyler Ferguson being himself telling a story and singing a song.
Yeah.
So for that, I talked to his agent, and, you know, once you know agents and managers, you get them on the phone, they know who you are, that makes it a lot easier, and then the process starts, you start a conversation, I would write up a one sheet that explains what the show is, trying to, like, entice the artist to, like, get in, like, say, oh, I want to be on that show.
Sort of like a breakdown if you're an actor.
Yeah, it's like a breakdown. It's like, you know, there's all these, there's so much terminology, there's a deck which lists, like, it has, like, the show on the first page, and then it goes through, like, what the show is about, and then who we want, and, like, the idea, and then there's a one sheet that I'll make, like, a breakdown that's, like catchy wording, and it has, like, a tagline and things like that. So a lot of my job is trying to sell the idea to an artist.
Yeah.
To say yes.
Say yes.
And hopefully all of you listeners will get to a place where I will be trying to get you on my shows. Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Well, so, do you ever consider unsolicited talent?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a website and I put my email out, and, like, I'm very easy to contact, and a lot of people will message me, or through word of mouth, comedians specifically will message me and be like, hey, I have this set. I would love for you to consider me for Jimmy Kimmel. Also for Just for Laughs, I book this thing with other people called Unrepped New Faces, where every summer we bring 11 comedians who don't have representation and try to showcase them for the industry in a 600-person theater where everyone from agents and managers to SNL to NBC to CBS, they're there. And so that is next week. I leave Saturday for Montreal. But that's a cool thing. So I do a lot of scouting. And this year I watched probably, I think it's about 1,500 tapes of comedians from all over the country.
I can't even process that. That's crazy.
It's a lot. So people find, you know, I reach out with my colleague Jeff for Just for Laughs Montreal. It's the biggest comedy festival in the world. And we reach out to club owners all over the country and say, hey, if you have any people who are in your club or who you think we would like, and then we'll reach out to famous comedians like Hannibal Buress and be like, who has opened for you on the road or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just, like, get a long list and we'll reach out and say, send us a clip, and we'll watch at least 3 minutes of everyone. And if we like the first 3 minutes, we'll keep watching. Mm-hmm. Or if we think, like, oh, they're not ready, we'll move on. But we watch everything that comes our way. And so,
that's,
yeah,
amazing.
I accept links, and I've promised people that I will watch them. Sometimes it takes me upwards of 3 months to get to it, but I have a long list and I work my way through slowly. But I also tell people, like, don't send me anything until you know you're ready. Cause, like, otherwise then I'll know you in my head as the person who's, like, not ready, like, too soon, too green. And, that hinders you more than it, you know, it's not a bad thing, but you should, if you've only been doing comedy a year, like, I'm not going to book you on Jimmy Kimmel. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. It's important to say that. I'm really glad you said that, because I think there's a tendency in this industry to kind of try and get moving at a professional level before you're actually really ready for that. Like, to try and get in front of an agent before you're really, really ready for an agent. Or just get in front of a casting director. I mean, you can kind of poison the water. It's like, as you say, you know, once you associate someone with like, oh, they're green, they weren't ready. It's like, you see them again. It's like, it's hard to sort of see through that or forget that.
Yeah, a first impression is important.
It really is. And you only get one of those. So, it's good to take your time before you try and do a showcase of any kind, whether it's for, you know, a producer or a potential agent or manager or a casting director or whatever.
Definitely. And I tell a lot of my friends from college were moving down after me, and I was saying, like, they really wanted to, like, get going. And I was saying, hey, like, make sure you have a job and friends. Like, live your life before you try to pursue this thing, because if you don't have the stability of, like, someone to talk to about an audition that didn't go well, or, like, you know, like, you need something to lean back on, or like, oh, it's really not working right now and I need to take a month off for my sanity. Oh, good thing I have this other job to support me. Mm-hmm. And so I try to say, like, slow down. I told my roommate, I was like, take a year, find the job you like. She's already gone through 3 jobs in 9 months because she wants to find the job that that can sustain her. And, you know, she's like taking her time and it's healthy. And I understand there is, you know, age is a thing. Like, if you're a female and you're 32, you feel like, oh no, I only look good for one more year, which is not true. Not true at all. No, but it's a, you know, it's an, it is an industry that is like youth oriented in many ways. So I understand the stress of it, but like, ultimately, like, things will be way more fulfilling if you have a life that goes along with your career, and you don't want your career to be your life.
Yeah. I could not agree more.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant advice. So what do you do on a daily basis for your work? What does that look like?
So I'm a freelancer. Jimmy Kimmel, like, is year round, but I'm a contractor for them, but I take projects as they come to me. Sometimes they're in an office and sometimes I work from home. I kind of laugh sometimes. I'm like in a towel and I answer the phone and I'm like, if this person saw what I looked like right now, but, every job is different. But as a freelance producer, you know, you bop around a lot. And so it's a lot of multitasking. So for Jimmy Kimmel, I only am at the office when I have a comedian on that day, or at the office, meaning at El Capitan Theater in Hollywood where we're filming. A lot of my work is done just, I can really work from anywhere for a lot of my projects, but then you have meetings and everything. So I'm either at home or at a coffee shop or in an office. A lot of the shows I'm on do offer me an office space and I come in and out. I'm starting a new show for 10 weeks that I can't really talk about, but it will involve like interviewing comedians on tape before, as part of like the casting process. And so there's an office available for me where I can record those and get them on film. And so I'll be in and out a lot and making appointments. But a lot of the day-to-day can be done from my house. And so like right now I have many projects going on. And it's just like being able to organize my day and get everything done. But, you know, as a talent producer, a lot of your job is like sending an offer and then you wait. And then it's so you can kind of do multiple things at once, like, because you're waiting for a response and you can't really follow up 2 hours later. You got to give them time to think it over. So, but yeah, a lot of the time I'm in a towel.
We could be in towels right now.
Yeah, you don't even know.
You don't know. This is a podcast.
We're not.
We're not.
We have clothes on.
We're clothed.
But yeah, I mean, last fall for 3.5 months, I was commuting an hour. I was commuting an hour to Culver City for 3 months on a job. That was that Comedy Central, the Comedy Jam. So it really varies. I really like to travel and bop around, and I like being able to head north to see my grandma. So I'm kind of trying to make the freelancer lifestyle work. And as I get more, as my career progresses, I'm hoping that I can stick with that, because then you know, it's like, oh, I know, like, I won't have a gig for these 2 weeks because this other gig I got doesn't start for 2 weeks. So then I can take a vacation or I can just relax or something. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's really, I'm very fortunate that I've made it work. Eventually, I'll probably take a, you know, you have to move up eventually and take a real job. I have real jobs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
An office job. My ultimate goal would be to, like, executive produce a show. And then, obviously, then you're on that one show. But talent producing is fun because you can, if you're able to make it work, you can bop around, which is cool.
That sounds like a great lifestyle.
And a lot of, you know, I have a lot of friends who are TV producers and line producers, or they're, like a project manager, and all those are freelancers. So, like, I've worked with some of the same people where I'm like, hey, we worked on that other show together. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the producer or the line producer will create their team. And then once you, like, know a line producer, or for me, once I know how I get a lot of my jobs are other talent producers can't do the job and then it gets passed to me or vice versa. We all kind of help each other out because it's kind of a small group that does comedy-specific talent producing. But, like, once you're in, if you want to produce... and you meet another producer, then you can always send them a resume, or if they hear things that they can't do, you know, it's a lot of word of mouth. So the thing I always say is A, be nice to everyone, and B, especially be nice to the assistants, because those assistants will eventually be the big manager or person.
This is so cool, because this is literally what I always say too. It's just so true. And that's why, hey Fern, you making your cameo? Fern likes to make her cameo.
Hey Kat.
Being nice to everybody is, like, of course, a good thing for life, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
But the reason that people in Hollywood seem to all know each other is because of the way these jobs do shift around and the networks do work. It's like, you work a series of jobs for a few years, whether you're, you know, any of the different pieces of it, you know, casting or acting or producing or even any of the tech stuff. And you inevitably do work with some of the same people again, sometimes right. multiple times. And then you're, you know, one degree of separation from so many people.
Right.
And it's just fascinating. And that's why it behooves you to...
Totally. And I worked with the same guy on a Fox show and then on a Comedy Central show. And then his friend got me a show for TBS. So, you know, it's like you see a lot of the same people. And, I mean, yes, you can... I understand that you can snap at people, and I've been snapped at, and then that person has apologized, and then you move on, because you know you'll see that person around, and you really don't want negative relationships, and if you have one, it's a good thing to work on, because you'll end up at a premiere party, and they'll be there, or something, or yeah. you'll end up in the same office as them, especially, you know, comedy is, I would say there are, like, 7 people who do the same job as me.
Wow.
Like... That, you know, it's like, especially for late night shows, there's a booker at Fallon, there's a booker at Colbert, you know, you can name the shows and that's how many late night bookers there are. And then there's also a few other people who are the bookers at different shows, like Comedy Central has this show called At Midnight, or, you know, where those are 3 comedians on the show being themselves. So that's Bart Coleman. He's a great talent producer who has helped me a lot. Thank you, Bart.
Shout out to Bart.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like you all know each other, mm-hmm. and then you want to get to a place where other people will hire you. And so if you, you know, if you're, once you meet one person, they'll introduce you to more and just be nice.
And it goes from there. And actually, we were talking about this earlier when you were saying, you know, if you do have a contact or two down here, don't be afraid to reach out to them. I would say it's been my experience on both sides of that, on the receiving and on the giving end of that, that most people, by and large, are really happy to help someone if they can. I mean, sometimes they can't. Sometimes totally. It doesn't make sense. Sometimes for whatever reasons, like they can't do the thing you would like them to do for you. But if they can, they typically are really happy to do it because it feels good.
Totally.
And they were helped.
Or they helped me get a job at my first bar.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have no money. Like, that's not even in the industry, but, like, I need, you know, it's hard to find a job in LA, period. So little things like that of, like, hey, I'll send your resume. I know the owner. I'll recommend you.
Yeah, well, actually, somebody, a daughter of a friend, just moved to town recently, and she has nannying experience. She wants to be an actor, was looking to be a nanny, and I put a thing out on my Facebook. You know, I know a lot of people with nannying age children.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like help is help.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
So what are some of the more challenging things about booking talent for a show like Jimmy Kimmel? And what are some of the best things?
I would say the worst thing is saying no to people. I send so many rejection emails and rejection phone calls. And it's, you know, some people are good, very good. They're just not a fit for what I'm booking. Or they're the last person who didn't make the cut and everyone else did or whatever. Like, you know, it's an industry full of rejection. And so it's really hard being the rejector. That's definitely the worst part. I've thousands of people I have rejected now. So that's tough. But it's also the other way. Other jobs, like not Jimmy Kimmel, I'm like begging talent to do it. So then I'm getting rejected by other talent who's like, no, like Louis C.K. is not going to do this show, Hannah, you know, or whatever, you know, right. And then it's like, well, of course he's not, he's Louis C.K., but, you know, I still ask and then I get rejected. So it goes both ways. So rejection is hard no matter what. Jimmy Kimmel's really fun because I'm giving talent their first network TV spot, and, it, you know, it means the world to them, and also, even just for laughs, Montreal, the festival I work for, if they get new faces, like, that's something every comedian wants, and it's a check on their checklist of goals, and it's really fun to be that person associated with that success of theirs, because hopefully, I mean, if you look at new faces of the past, 15 years ago, Kevin Hart and Amy Schumer were both new faces.
Really?
And if people are good people, then they'll remember you as that person that helped them, and also, you never know. Maybe a budding career partnership could happen. You never know. So it's really fun being associated with their first TV set. And that's very exciting. I kind of forget the question. The goods and the bads?
Yeah,
was that what it was?
Yeah. The better things and the worst things.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely that. Giving someone their opportunity and they're so thankful, which is a nice feeling. And then the vice versa, you know.
Yeah, the flip side
of
that.
The flip side,
yeah. The inevitable flip side.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite stories?
I mean, I've worked with definite heroes, for sure. Like, Robin Williams I worked with, and then I saw him again, and he remembered my name. He was like, hey, Hannah. And I was like, oh, my God. So that was definitely a top moment, for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I guess, like, for me, some of my... my favorite moments would be, like, realizing that people take me seriously.
Yeah.
That sounds so funny, but, like, I'm 27 years old, and I feel still like a college, high school, middle schooler, something. And though I think that never goes away. I think you never realize that you're older than you are.
I'm 53, so I guess I'm basically double your age, and I was having this conversation with a girlfriend who's exactly my age, and she was saying, I just feel like I'm still, it doesn't change, Hannah.
It's crazy. The only thing I've noticed is, like, my knees are weaker. Like, I, like, work out, and I'm like, oh, God, I feel my knees. I'm very tall. It's not good. But, oh, man, what was I even saying?
You were talking about how, you know, you're 27, and what a kind of joy it is to feel, like, legitimate in the eyes of people who are your heroes.
Yeah, that's very cool. I can't deny that. The funny thing, too, is, like, I can't really describe to people back home what I do for a living, because, like, people don't get it, and I'm like, no, I'm, like, an important person. Like, believe me.
I'm legit.
Yeah. Like, this person knew my name. But at the same time, it's, like, it kind of goes to show that, like, we're all just living our lives, and it doesn't, like, success, yes, like, it's great, but at the same time, like, you could be happy without extreme success also.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think one of my favorite things is just being taken seriously. And sometimes I find myself laughing where I'm like, oh, that comedian, or someone posts something on Facebook of a comedian and I'm like, oh, they don't even know that that's one of my really good friends, like a famous mm-hmm. comedian, or just like, yeah, it's getting to a place where realizing that all these people are just people and like, you know, fun things that I used to run a comedy club for a year and a half, and I got to know a lot of comics that way, you know, the green room, and, like, different fun things of, like, Sarah Silverman was on stage, and Michael Sheen, her boyfriend, was in the green room, and I made him take a picture of him kissing my cheek, or, like, or, like, Adam Scott was on stage, and he asked me to watch his kids in the green room, so, like, and, like, he would look at me, and I would keep giving him the thumbs up of, like, you know, it's, like, there's just fun. Dave Chappelle dropped into my theater, and one of my interns had to drive his, like, Maserati, like, really fancy car that, like, they had to park it, and they were, like, shaking when they got out of the car. Or just really, you know,
yeah.
A wide array of funny. And, you know, comedians are fun to be around, and it's a lot of, they're just normal people cracking jokes. And, yeah, it's just fun. It's fun being a person who, like, those people recognize, and at the same time, it's fun for me realizing that they're just people and treating them as just people. Yeah.
Well, you're very funny. I think of you as a very, very funny person. I've known you since you were a kid, and it's just like, not everybody has that particular talent or, I don't know, gift, whatever it is.
It definitely helps to be able to keep up, I will say, comedy specifically, but, yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's fun. I can't keep up, but I can try to keep up.
Yeah,
I mean?
But you're doing okay.
Yeah.
So you also, though, seem to be moving toward documentary producing.
Yeah.
Which is so cool, I think. Can you tell me a bit about your current projects?
Sure. So Bite to the Future is a feature film. To sum it up, it's about in vitro meat, or meat that is made in a lab without killing an animal. And it's been very fun. I've helped book interviews with Wolfgang Puck and Joel Stein from Time and Hasan Minhaj from The Daily Show and Moby the musician and Ingrid Newkirk, who's the head of PETA. Lots of fun variety of casting that went into it. And we just signed with Paradigm as our sales agent, which
Fantastic.
Is very exciting.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's awesome. And they found us we were posting on social media. We have Facebook and Instagram, and they found us, which is awesome. And we just had been putting out, like, little trailers and things like that, which was, it was just, we put ourselves out there and they found us, so that was very exciting. So for that, we do a lot of, like, budgeting and traveling, and, you know, it's been putting our own money into it, and now that we have Paradigm, they're helping us find funding for the remainder of our film, which is... very necessary, and it's making it so we don't have to apply for grants, which is great. I've looked at many grant applications, and they are insane. I had started applying for some, and then funding came in, and then I never did. But it's a wild world. But there, you know, what's cool is there is a lot of opportunity for women. There's so many grants out there for films where the protagonist is a woman, or films that are either directed or produced or have like a key player that is a female. So that's very cool. There's like Chicken and Egg, which is female specific, and a lot of other opportunities. Also, there's a lot of diversity specific grants. But as a female, it's exciting to know there's so much. They're trying to push female directors and protagonists into the documentary field.
That's exciting, and I actually had no idea. I guess if I'd ever sat down and thought about it, it might have occurred to me, but it hasn't been on my radar. But there, of course, must be specific grants out there for women producing, women directing, women written, women led, whatever, and different, you know, underserved populations. How would you go about finding such a thing?
There's a lot of different... If you just Google it, there's everything on there.
So start with Google.
But I'm also a member of like the International Documentary Association. It costs like $85 a year, and they give you a quarterly magazine, and you can go to all these different talks in Los Angeles, which is very cool. The IDA, I recommend it if you're into docs. It's also just a way to support documentary, which is nice. And like Werner Herzog did a thing, and they did a screening of Tickled, which I went to see, which was a cool documentary. But, yeah, like, they have lists of grants, but you can just do a lot of research, and I follow a lot of, you know, documentary filmmakers on Twitter, and a bunch of them live here. You can kind of go hear them speak. Rory Kennedy lives here, and Liz Garbus, who are big female producer, documentary directors. You can just kind of type in female-specific grants, or they have, like, a lot of, looking for people from other country grants or mm-hmm. diversity grants, and, there's also a lot of grants for, you know, the straight white males out there. Don't get discouraged. No, but it is true that, you know, it's...
Yes, yes. Yeah. I know. It's an interesting conversation, you know. And yeah. I guess if you're part of the sort of dominant population, it might be unnerving to hear about all these specific grants that are not for you. But,
well, it's hard for comedians. Like, there's a lot of men mm-hmm. and white men that do comedy. Mm-hmm. And, like, when you're talent producing, you want a variety of type of comedian. And that does play into it, you know?
Yeah.
It's, like, just like with casting, it's funny if people overheard some of my calls. Like, you say, oh, do we have, like, a black person? Like, because you have to. And if you look at any show, if it was all white people, you'd be like, what is like
what's going on here?
And there's, you know, there's so much great conversation about Asian actors right now in the industry, and just trying to be representative and also catering to different audiences. Like you know, it's like this won't do well in this room, and this guy won't do well in that room, and you try to, you know, someone who's going to see Monique perform stand-up is not the same person who's going to see, like, a one-liner, like a Dimitri Martin one-liner alternative comedian or a Maria Bamford or something. Like, they're different audiences. Mm-hmm. And America is vast. You know, the number one show on TV is The Big Bang Theory, or, like, Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy are really popular in America and not so popular on the coasts. And on the coasts, you have, like, it's just different humor.
Yeah.
And so you have to be representative of the whole country and try to be of the whole world if it's a something that people will see abroad.
It's so important. And I think everybody in that food chain, you know, every single step of the way, you know, casting, representing, directing, producing, whatever, who has anything to do with choosing who gets to be representing, you know, on screen, has a responsibility to be mindful about that. I really do.
Definitely. And, like, it does, if someone overheard my conversations, they'd be like, what did you just say? But it's me being like, hey guys, like, I think it'd be really great to, like, have a Hispanic or something, like some, you know, or, like, we should, like, Latino, something. And, like, you know, you just kind of are blunt about, I just am, like, you get to a place where you're like, hey, we don't have any, like, gay comics or something. And, like, I know labels aren't great, but, like, how else am I supposed to say it, really? Like, you want to be representative. And, you know, I get nervous just saying it right now. I'm like, oh, I hope the listeners understand what I'm trying to say. But it's true, you know? It's like, you can't have all the same thing. And, yeah.
It doesn't work, and it doesn't serve the audience. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world to see someone who looks like you. Mm-hmm. Or let's back off a little bit from even looks and just say that you can identify with.
Yeah.
You know, out there in the world. Because it makes it feel like, oh, I could do this too, or they're speaking to me, or my voice is heard, or all the different things. And it's just, I just think it's so important. So I love that. I love that you're mindful of that. And yeah, we are awkward when we talk about it. You know, we're awkward because it's a problem that hasn't been solved yet.
Definitely.
Or we wouldn't have to talk about it.
But I also think anyone who's trying to be an actor or a performer, like, as much as, like, looks don't matter, they do, because, like, you look the way you look, and if you don't fit a role, like, you don't fit it. But at the same time, we need to write roles for everyone and make sure, like, oh, let's just not focus on, like, very, very skinny girl, like be representative of normal people, which is something that we need to work on, I think. But that's why comedy is nice. I think normal, whatever that word means, like, it's not just the Hollywood starlets and, you know, that are, comedy has all types of people, I would say, that are succeeding, and no matter what they look or believe in or whatever. So that's why comedy, I think, really speaks to me, and I like working in it, because you can see, like, I would say, just such a variety of female and male and what everything in between.
That's beautiful. That's just beautiful. Any advice for a developing performer who's dreaming about doing comedy on a national stage?
Well, I would say that when a comedian is, like, trying to be something they're not, like, we can tell. Like, even if you write a joke where you're, like, pretending that this thing happened to you, like, I can usually tell when it is a fake story, which isn't always bad. Like, it's funny. Great. But, like, I think the number one thing is, like, figuring out who you are and your voice and sticking to it. And, like, just, like, some people, I think just finding your type is important. And type, whatever that means to you, but, like, whatever you are, like, that's what you are. Mm-hmm. Especially in comedy, because you're spewing your own opinions and thoughts into the world. Whereas if you're an actor, you know, you're portraying someone else and you get to embody that. But if you're being yourself, like, if you start as one thing and change, like, into, you know, what you start as should be what you want to be. And so it's not, like you were saying, sometimes it's not good to, like, try to get out there too soon, because if you haven't figured out your voice, of course it comes with time and obviously practice. And I think, like, you know, different things, like Ellen DeGeneres playing, like, a straight woman at the start of her career, you know. So, of course, there's different factors that go into things. But I think that there's so much content and so many people trying to be comedians right now. Like, it's a very hard world, and it's a full, full world. And not to be discouraging, but, you know, there's, it's, like, comedy is very popular right now. And I have people I went to high school with calling me being like, I want to try comedy. Like, do you have recommendations? Which is great. Like, comedy's fun and it's cathartic and it puts you out there. And I think it's like a cool exercise at the start if you're not necessarily trying to be like a famous, like have it be your career. But yeah, you just really got to be yourself. That'd be my number one thing. My number two thing would be like, it takes a really long time to figure out how to write a joke or to be funny. You're probably going to be really bad at first and not to be discouraged. People take years to get to a place where they're successful or take years to get to a place where they like feel confident in their material. And like I said earlier, like if you are submitting something and you're not ready, it shows. And so getting to a place where you feel confident, if you're confident, like it's much easier for the audience to be confident in you. But, yeah, my number one thing is, like, if you're trying to do comedy specifically, like, being yourself for sure. And, like I was saying, like, there's all types of people in comedy. Like, an example I would say is Fortune Feimster. She's, like, she's a lesbian. She's, like, overweight. And she's, like, the funniest female. And she's been starring in movies recently. And she was on Chelsea Lately. And she wears, like, little Hooters outfits on Funny or Die. She's very funny. And she has a Southern accent. And she's just, like, so true to who she is. And because of that, she's, like, wildly endearing. She's very castable because she's, like, very, like, you're casting for Fortune. Like, you're, because, like, people will write roles for her. And at the same time, if you're kind of a generic person, that's fine. Like, there are, like, she's kind of an extreme. And then if there's plenty of people who are, you know, John Mulaney is a white, kind of, like, clean-cut comedian who just stands there and does jokes. And yes, he does other things, obviously. He wrote on SNL and did his show called Oh, Hello. But, you know, he's, like, your all-American next-door boy. And he's made a career out of that. So it ranges, but that's who he is, and he's sticking to it. And I also think, as a comedian, like, being a writer, like, you don't have to be a... You can start as a performer and become a writer. And if you want to be in comedy, you know... First, like, all the sitcoms right now are starring stand-ups. If you watch them, it's all stand-ups.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's like Ron Funchess or Rory Scovel or all these stand-ups are just getting all these roles. And I think that's probably why a lot of people are starting to do stand-up, because they see that happening. But a lot of stand-ups, I know, like, you wouldn't know who they are, but they're writing the things that you're watching and enjoying. Or they're writing the Oscars, or they're working on James Corden's show, and they're also stand-ups at night. And they tour on the weekends. And so there's just so many different ways to be in the world. And, like, a lot of, you know, not everyone can be someone with a Netflix special. They can be, you can be a road dog, just someone who travels and does comedy every weekend in a different city. And it's not someone who you might not know who they are, but, like, in the comedy world, we know who they are because they're famous within our bubble. So there's all different variations.
That's great advice. Any advice for would-be young documentary producers?
Ooh, well, it's not a very lucrative career.
passion.
It's passion, for sure. You know, if you're producing, you're also working creatively probably with the director, or you're directing it and producing it. The, like, true documentary producers are few and far between, or they work at a production company, or they work at Netflix or Participant Media or something like that. So if you have an idea for a documentary, you got to just make it. The one I'm doing, called A Russian Summer, I was a camp counselor in 2007 in Russia. So I went back last year with my friend Kyle, who was also a counselor, and he makes documentaries. And we filmed five of our campers, interviewed them about their lives now. You'll have to wait and see what it ends up being. But, you know, we just crowdfunded and then applied for some grants and ended up getting one. And then also the program we went with ended up giving us a nice amount of money. And so it just, you know, if you have people in your life, you can crowdfund. It's a nice way to do it. Even if everyone gives $20, that can really help. And obviously be selective. Don't ask all your friends for money all the time. But, like, you know, this is my one passion project that I'm doing. And so I asked for money, and initially we got like $7,000 from crowdfunding, and were able to go to Russia. And then when we got back, we applied for grants, and then we were able to, you know, now we're editing it because of that grant money we were able to get. And so, you know, you just have to find a way to do it. There's not really a specific way. There's not much money in it. But a lot of documentaries that you see on Netflix or that are even Oscar shorts or something like that, like, it's just people making something they want to make and putting their mind to it and finding the time to do it. Because a lot of those people, you know, aren't full-time. They do other things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of them are. You can find ways to do it. But if you were to list the top 30 people, that's pretty much the top 30 people, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, documentaries are so important because, you know, of all the different kinds of work that is produced in this industry, they can be very focused on deliberate, world-changing, life-changing subjects. And they can be an incredible, a very small film, you know, small meaning, you know, little budget, produced by just a handful of people, can shift the perception of so many people that it actually literally does change things in a very meaningful, permanent way. And so there's a huge power available to that. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for that. And I just love to see you wading into those waters. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
I can't wait to see it. And actually, full disclosure, Clara was in that same program a couple years ahead of you.
That's right.
And I know how powerful that was.
Definitely.
So happy that you're documenting.
Thanks. You know,
what's come since.
I also think that Searching for Sugar Man was mostly filmed on an iPhone. Some docu-series like Making a Murderer or The Keepers, those take years to make. And so it's like there's a lot of patience involved. A lot of those people have other jobs while they're making them. Or the Searching for Sugar Man guy stumbled upon a great story, which obviously, lucky him, what an incredible story to tell. But like, you know, if you have an iPhone and you want to make something, just start making it and putting it online. And, you know, our Bite to the Future thing, the director, Scott, who is awesome, has been working on it for 4 years. I've been working on it for a few years with him now, not quite four, but, and he just started on his own because he had written his senior thesis about it and liked it. And he was like, I should make a doc. And just started on his own and ended up spending his own money when he could. And, you know, just, you know, you make it work. And a lot of things, you know, there's so much content that it is hard where you can't just like put something online and be found, but maybe you could. I feel like Justin Bieber is an example of that. Frickin' Usher was like, who's this kid? You never know. And it happens. There's so many random examples of that, I feel like.
You know, because of the technology and the way we're all connected right now, it really is the case that you can be like, you know, the Judy Garland, like, you know, I got a barn, let's put on a play, you know, and that piece of work can be seen by millions of people.
Yeah.
You know, if you do a good job. I mean, and then that's the whole thing. It's like you've got to give it your best, and it's got to be quality work. But if it is, it could really go somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. And so there's like, fewer gatekeepers, it means that more creative ideas can be manifested.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's not a bad thing to put yourself out there. And like we were saying, when you put yourself out there, do it when you're ready to do it. And that, like, you know, good things can come from it. Yeah,
that's beautiful. Finally, any advice for parents who are hoping to help their kids succeed in this business, which is a very loose, business, but you know. Entertainment, the things that you've, you know, been part of, any lessons that you've learned that you could sort of like share with parents to sort of help set their kids up to go in the right direction and be more likely to be successful.
Well, I definitely think I was lucky that my mom lived in LA and I lived with her for my first 3 months and then moved out. And my parents definitely helped me like financially at the start. I think eventually I paid my dad back, but I think towards the beginning he probably lent me upwards of $5,000 to put a deposit on an apartment and all that. But then my dad was very much like, I'm not giving you, like, if you fall, I'll catch you, but, like, you got to figure yourself out. You're an adult. And I think he made me work hard. The bar that I worked at was a soccer bar where it was European soccer games. And so starting at 3 a.m., I was there until noon serving, and we couldn't serve alcohol till 6 a.m., but it was guys watching Arsenal and Manchester United and all these international teams play in Europe. And it was definitely a way to experience adulthood. But I would get up at 2 a.m. I would go to bed, get up at 2 a.m. and go to work 3 days a week. And, you know, you learn from that. And I pushed myself. And I would just say, like, you know, you really have to work hard to live in L.A. and make it work. It's a very hard city. There's so much rejection. And it's very, you know, we all just drive in our cars and you can easily not have contact with people. It can be a lonely city. But at the same time, everything is here. Everything comes here. Every concert, every game, every movie premieres here. And there's so many classes and there's meetups and ways to meet people. And you can get by here without a lot of money, too. Like, you can make it work. My roommate does that. And she doesn't make very much, and she makes it work, and she's very happy here because it's hard not to be with the weather. But coming from Seattle, but it is easy to kind of feel lost and get lost in the city, both literally and figuratively. But yeah, I would definitely say, like, it's not a town where you want to be babied. You really have to, like, you kind of have to grow up to make it work. And yeah, I feel very fortunate that my parents supported me, but at the same time, like, they really were like, come on, Hannah, like, get it, make it, figure it out. And then I got that job. I ended up having it for 2 years at that bar. I kind of miss it because it was fun. You're on your feet and you're running around and you have regular customers, and it was like a local pub. But I don't really miss it, but you know what I mean?
But there's something kind of, like, delicious about, you know, being a young adult on your own and actually figuring it out and making it work. It feels good.
I feel like that it empowers you to, like, feel like you can take risks, or it makes you feel better about going to a job interview. Even if I talked to this guy, I was like, listen, I work at a bar, but, like, listen how devoted I am. Like, I get up early. I make it work. Like, I've never slept through my alarm. Like, I'm smart. I have to remember. I run around. There's 200 people in this room and me and one other person. And I go around without a notepad and I ask them what they want and I have to remember it. And then I have to carry it all and deliver it. Like, just being a waitress is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And being a successful waitress is hard. And so just trying to find a way to show that those skills can go towards something else. Just, you know, it all, you learn from all of it and it all overlaps, even if it's different industries. But, yeah, I definitely think, like, finding ways to make it work is definitely important. I think some of the people I've watched who have had it, who, like, haven't really had jobs, like, I feel like they have less, I don't want to sound mean, but, like, rejection hurts them more, maybe. Like, you get thick skin when you move here. And just for me, being 22 and working at a bar and being like, whoa, people drink alcohol? And adult, like, or it's just like, you know, it opened my eyes to, oh, wow, like, people live really different lives. Or coming from a small town, being like, wait, you're 40 and you have 3 roommates and you don't have a family? Like, just seeing different, you know, coming from a sort of sheltered background of very family-oriented background, you know, you're exposed to different things. And so I do think those jobs that aren't very incredible, but I think they're important. I feel like if you're not going to serve in the army, you should be a waitress. It's like,
oh, I love
it's like
that.
Some other, and then I always tip 20% because if you're having a bad day, I still know you're having a hard, you're still working hard, and, like, you're putting yourself through this so that you can pursue something else. Or if you want to be a waitress, good for you, whatever. But, like, I think it's like a rite of passage. And so yeah, just to be able to put up with the rejection that some people are very lucky. It happens for them immediately. But if you're not and you get rejected a lot, you got to find a way to be able to put up with that and deal with it. And I wasn't used to people saying no to me. And I had some people say no to me in those first few years in LA. And that's hard. And if you're not prepared for it, you have to grow. You have to figure out a way to use it and grow. And so, yeah, not being babied. It would be my advice.
Yeah, no, actually, I think that's really, really good advice. And there's a lot of talk, you know, these days about the kind of parenting, the helicopter parenting that is so prevalent anymore, that it really kind of hinders kids because then they really don't get a chance to develop the skills that they need to have when they're on their own. So they're kind of crippled. And then they also, between them and them, they don't know that they can do it, which is its own kind of crippling thing. And so it is really helpful if your kid has a big dream that's going to require serious grit, to pull off, which frankly, any job, any career in the entertainment industry that I can think of, that would be the case for it. Yeah. Any of it. You've got to have a lot of grit to make it. Help the kids develop some grit in little ways at home. Like, don't have everything just be handed to them.
I also think, like, I've worked with on set, I've had children on set, and it's, you know, it's, this one kid, you know, he's standing next to a famous actor that he's working with, and he's able to be there composed, he's able to be grounded, he can take notes, he can be, he's responsive, and obviously, like, yeah, I mean, those are skills that hopefully you'll have if you're working in a professional environment, but, like, it is a professional environment. So if this young person hasn't really learned how to be a professional in other ways, like, they might not really realize how to be a professional in the professional world in the entertainment industry. And so just, like, learning, working at that bar, you know, having someone be mean to me or return an order or leave me $0 as a tip, you're like, oh, like, these people are kind of, like, I was treated this way. And, like, you know, on a fast-moving set, or, like, I've worked with a director who is very nice when the show's not happening, and then the show starts, and he's kind of a jerk because he's, like, working and concentrating, and, like, he could treat people nicer, but that's how he works, and you know that, and if you want to keep working with him, you that's just how it is. You deal with it, and to be able to deal with it, you have to know, that, like, that exists and be prepared for that.
And know so, that it's not about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. Though, everything's about me.
Come on. Ultimately, that's why you're here. Well, I am so... It's just been so fun
to
have
you
here.
Really fun.
It really is. It's just, it's so cool to see, you know, your path opening up, and I'm super curious to see where it leads you. I know, right? Well, we've been talking about this, and the truth is, you know, it's important to remember that many of us do have multiple lives. I mean, I have had multiple lives, and I know your mom has. And,
yeah.
And whatever you start out doing may well not be what you end up doing, and you may do, you know, 5 or 6 different things in between.
If someone told me in college that I would be the stand-up booker at Jimmy Kimmel Live, I'd be like, you're kidding. Like, what? No, I don't even know anything about stand-up, really. And now they trust me, and I do the job, and I think I do it well, so.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And you're still in your 20s, so congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's huge. So, everybody, look for the results of Hannah's efforts on Jimmy Kimmel Live and in the upcoming documentaries Bite to the Future and A Russian Summer. And to continue to see what she does next, follow her. She's got a great website. It's hannahkcrichton.com, which I'm going to spell out.
Great.
It's HannahKCrichton, hannahkcrichton.com. You're on Instagram at Hannah K. Crichton, and on Twitter at, okay,
it's Hannah Kyle. It's so stupid. I don't know why that, I should have it be the same. Hannah Kyle, H-A-N-N-A-H-H-H, Kyle. Imagine there's a scream, Hannah Kyle. Dumb. It's really dumb.
They'll find you. And on the show notes, I'm going to try and put up the documentary social media stuff, because that sounds really interesting.
Cool, thanks.
And maybe a link to that International Documentary Association. That's something that I think some people could find really useful.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, thank you. Hope it was interesting and maybe helpful.
I'm sure it was. It was interesting to me for sure, and I'm sure it'll be very helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com and sign up on the podcast page to get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. For about the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.